At 9 p.m., the room still crowded, the first pictures sent back by Ranger were made public at a press briefing. As the images were projected onto a screen, a flurry of oohs and ahs was forthcoming from all present. The pictures, just a few samples from the 4,316 which had been received, were far more detailed than we could have imagined. A total of 400 frames had been processed up to that point, and their excellence was verified by astronomer Dr. Gerald Kuiper, a member of the Ranger team from the University of Arizona's Lunar and Planetary Laboratory. To him, they were more than just pictures. They were scientific documents.
I can assure you, when I had the privilege of seeing these for the first time, of course, the 400 frames, every one, I thought, was a bullseye as far as quality is concerned. I mean, I have never in my experience as a scientist seen a series of scientific documents where there is just a good selection of good quality pictures among a whole lot of indifferent pictures, but where every picture, literally every picture of the A and B series is of high quality.
As each slide image was projected onto the screen, Dr. Kuiper pointed out the tremendous clarity and technical excellence. And finally, the last picture was shown, and the information it revealed was stunning.
The spacecraft took this picture approximately 1,000 feet above the lunar surface. The field you see here is 60 by 100 feet. 60 by 100 feet. And the smallest craters that can be seen are craters down to sizes of 3 feet. And the resolution, the best resolution obtained, is approximately 1.5 feet. This is 1,000 times better than the best photographs which were available up to yesterday. 1,000 times better. Now, the frame was not complete before the spacecraft had the opportunity to complete the transmission of the data on the Vidicon. The spacecraft hit the moon, was destroyed, and the transmission stopped.
Ranger had performed perfectly, right up to the shattering end. And among the more important facts revealed in the picture, the lunar surface has many tiny craters heretofore impossible to see. These craters make some areas a bad prospect for a lunar landing. As one scientist put it, they should be avoided like poison. But there are plenty of good landing spots too, and the astronauts won't have to worry about sinking into deep layers of dust. Most of the craters were similar in shape and form, regardless of size, and though the edges are not sharp, which indicates that there is a dust layer, the similarity in form and shape indicates that just under the dust lies a hard crust which could support a lunar landing. Dr. Kuiper put it this way.
I would say then, in summing up, that the new region of knowledge is, in the true sense, an extension of the earlier knowledge. I think it shows that the craters continue to occur down to sizes of about 3 feet in diameter, about 1 foot depth. This clearly implies that we are not dealing here with enormous layers of dust, of very loose dust, that is, very loose material where one would not expect any small features to be visible at all. It's not like sand, in other words. And then when you have an impact in sand, all you get is just little waves, I mean, soft features. It is not that kind of a thing.
And there were other findings, too, as contained in this report we filed from the laboratory soon after that press conference.
We have just seen a series of photographs taken in the final sequence of the Ranger 7 mission as Ranger approached the surface of the moon on Friday morning at a speed of more than 5,000 miles per hour. Altogether, scientists have received 4,316 photographs. These range from those that were hundreds of miles out from the surface to one that was only half completed at the time the spacecraft struck. This one was actually taken or started at about 1,000 feet above the surface of the moon. The most significant points found, according to the scientists who addressed newsmen here in an hour-long press conference, was that what we have been able to see with these pictures is 1,000 times better than we've been able to see before with telescopes. The best telescope on Earth can bring the moon to a comparable distance of 500 miles away, and this particular series of experiments brought the moon as close as 50 feet in that same frame of reference. The questioning was at times quite pointed and very severe, and especially hard for the scientists to endure, since they have had such a relatively short time to study the pictures sent back by Ranger 7. One scientist said, "It looks as though we have at least 3 years of hard work lying ahead of each one of us to try to determine the true significance of the information contained on these photographs." The photographs were extremely fine in detail. They revealed craters and depressions in the surface of the moon as small as 3 feet in diameter and 1.5 feet in depth. And these craters were not even known to scientists up until this time because they could not be seen through telescopic instruments from Earth. More new knowledge to be added to the ever-growing flux of knowledge about the world outside our world. Now knowledge about the moon, where man may go in 1969 in Project Apollo. From the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, this is Air Force Sergeant Bill Higginbotham, AFRTS Shortwave News reporting.
There were many other findings. However, since the information has not yet been analyzed in depth, it might be best not to go into detail. Suffice it to say that the basis for many discoveries is promised by the first glimpse of the pictures, and new clues as to the origin of the moon are indicated. The scientists concerned with the photo analysis say they have 3 years of hard, meticulous work ahead. Our concern on this program is centered on the effort expended to provide the unparalleled scientific data, the project called Ranger, and the success of Ranger 7. The Ranger program ran the gamut. Criticized at times as a waste and at other times its practicality challenged, the project weathered the storm. And as to its value and its meaning to the world, well, Dr. Kuiper summed it up with some eloquence.
This program has had great difficulties in the past, but that is because it was a tremendously ambitious program. And I think all of these various difficult things which have been attempted have now been brought to a degree of perfection simultaneously, which has made this experiment really a model experiment for years to come. That every aspect, literally every aspect, from the ballistics, the mid-course maneuver, to the picture-taking, everything has behaved according to the textbook, let us say. It was a textbook case, and I'm sure this case is making history.
The experiment has already made history. And a footnote to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like at this time to introduce Dr. William H. Pickering, Director of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Dr. Pickering.
Ladies and gentlemen, at the present time, we are waiting for some of the pictures which were taken with Ranger 8 to be brought down and shown to you. They will be here very shortly. In the meantime, I might comment that today we have received the congratulations of numerous people for the success of the Ranger. In particular, I would like to mention that we have received congratulations from Senator Anderson, Chairman of the House Committee on Astronautics and Science, and Congressman Miller, Chairman of the Senate Committee, and Congressman Miller, Chairman of the House Committee on Science and Astronautics. At this time, I would also like to introduce to you are the other people here on the stage. On the extreme left, Mr. Cartwright, Deputy Director of the Office of Space Sciences and Applications at NASA. Next to him, Mr. Whitaker, one of the experimenters from the University of Tucson. Mr. Heacock, another experimenter from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Dr. Urey, from the University of California at La Jolla, and Dr. Shoemaker from the Geological Survey Observatory at Flagstaff, Arizona. Shortly, Dr. Kuiper, the chief experimenter, also from the University of Arizona, will be joining us here. The examination of the photographs, which we have been able to do so far, has revealed that we do have photographs of the same general quality as the Ranger 7 photographs, but of course these cover a wide swath across the moon instead of coming in on one area as they did in the case of Ranger 7. One consequence of this sweeping across the wide swath of the moon is that there is a variation in the exposure as we go from the fully sunlit part of the moon up towards the terminator. This has given some variation in the quality of the photographs, but this, of course, was expected. On the whole, we can say that we have almost twice as many pictures as in the case of Ranger 7, and of the same quality as the Ranger 7 photographs. In a few minutes, we hope to have some of these pictures for you to look at yourselves. The area of the moon which is covered, as shown in this diagram, includes areas ranging from the Maria areas to the mountainous areas. And thus we have more of a sample of the different types of lunar terrain. As we said last night, the entire operation was conducted in an admirable fashion with very little in the way of difficulties from the time of launch up to the time of impact. The trajectory was corrected by the mid-course maneuver, and we were brought in very close to the target, the present estimates being of the order of about 15 miles miss distance. So that we feel that with these two Ranger shots, we have demonstrated the type of performance that the Ranger is capable of. We have demonstrated our ability to precisely guide a unmanned spacecraft to a precision target on the moon. As you know, one remaining Ranger will be launched in the near future. This also will be at a different area of the moon, so that we will, between the three Ranger shots, hoping that Ranger 9 also is successful, we will have received close-up photographs of three different parts of the lunar surface. At the moment, I am not quite sure how long we'll have to wait until these photographs arrive. As you know, we wanted to put this press conference at the earliest possible time, and we obviously are straining our resources a bit to get the pictures down here in a form which can be presented to the conference. When I referred to having looked at the photographs, these were first cuts at the films, some of them indeed were negatives, and we have just run off some sample photographs which will be shown to you in a few minutes. Present time, I guess, they're still in the dark room processing these pictures. So we're just cutting it a little bit close. Even though we don't have the photographs, oh yes, I see some people running in the back door. Where is Dr. Kuiper? Is Dr. Kuiper there? Come on. Dr. Kuiper, Dr. Kuiper, I'd like to have you take the microphone and talk to us about these pictures, and they are getting the slides ready to be projected. Dr. Kuiper.
Thank you, Dr. Pickering. Well, as you, I'm sure, are all aware, there was another resounding success in the Ranger program. The pictures that Ranger 8 got are excellent. All cameras behaved. We have, of course, seen only a sample of the pictures so far, but we have seen several hundred of them, and I can assure you that the results have been very good. The equipment was functioning well, and the scientific results will, I'm sure, be of very great interest. Unlike the mission of Ranger 7, which was restricted to a rather narrow area in the region that has now been called Mare Cognitum, in recognition of the American space achievement, the mission of Ranger 8 covered a rather wider area. The cameras swept over highlands before they finally closed in on a region in Mare Tranquillitatis, that is in the Sea of Tranquility. And of course the results, the closer pictures were all taken in the region of the Sea of Tranquility, one particular corner of it. But the coverage of the highlands was, so to say, an unexpected benefit of this mission, and these results are very good also. In a minute or two, we shall have some slides to show you samples of these new results, which have just been prepared for this conference. So in summary, some 7,000 pictures, photographs of pictures of photographic quality have been obtained, and of course the evaluation will take a long time. As a matter of fact, as an astronomer, a professional astronomer, it would be my judgment that the evaluation of the Ranger 8 results will take even longer than the Ranger 7 results, simply because there is more of it. That is, we have a tremendous coverage here. One of the great points of interest is not merely the straight photography, but the combination of photographs which one can make between the different cameras. One can combine the series taken with the A camera with the series taken with the B camera, and because these cameras have different angles, they looked at the moon, at the same area of the moon. They swept pretty much over the same area, but they looked at that same area from different directions, from different points in space, and the angles between the two camera directions is up to about 20 degrees or so, and this will allow us to do stereoscopic work, to do photogrammetry, as it is called technically, and get height measurements. So I'm quite convinced from inspection of the data that they will lead to good measurements of lunar elevations. Of course, such results are of great interest in connection with the Apollo program, as well as of scientific interest. So we will have very good coverage for map making, for the study of the different processes that go on the moon or have gone on the moon, the lunar history, and then we will have also good data on lunar elevations in that strip of the moon that has been covered by the Ranger results. I'd like to inquire now how we are doing with the slides. All right, I think we are ready now to look at some of the slides. I think this is all right. I am starting with a picture of the moon as it appeared this morning at 2 a.m. approximately, when the impact occurred and when the mission was made. So here you see the moon approximately with the elevation as it with the illumination, that is, which it had this morning Sometimes if I use the wrong word, you will have to forgive me because we haven't had much sleep in the last 36 hours. Occasionally there was time for a couple of hours of sleep, but it hasn't been enough. Now, the region over to the left, no, over to the right, and near the edge of the frame, that is where the Sea of Tranquility is located. So you have two seas there. The one on top is Mare Serenitatis, the Serenity Sea, and the one below is Mare Tranquillitatis, the Tranquility, and that is where the impact occurred. Now over to the, in the central portion below this bright crater, I don't know whether there is a, yeah, there is a pointer here. Right. So here is where the impact occurred, and the sweep was over this high terrain before the Sea of Tranquility here was impacted at this place. Now, the previous studies were made of Ranger 7 were made in this area between the cloud sea here and the Mare Nubium and Oceanus Procellarum. And so what Ranger did, what Ranger 7 did, was to cover, if in effect, from this shoreline here over to the left. This portion here was well covered by Ranger 7. Now what Ranger 8 did was to cover essentially from this shoreline on up to the right, and this was covered with magnification which was larger than that of telescopic magnification, but not by a tremendous factor. The very large gain was in this region here. The next slide shows you, I'm just going to show you one of the Ranger 7 pictures to bear out what I just said. Here you see the crater Alphonsus, the crater Arzachel, the crater Ptolemaeus, the crater Alphonsus, the crater Arzachel. This was the edge of the area covered by Ranger 7, and from here the sweep was to the left, and the highest resolution was obtained here in Mare Cognitum. This is that crater Guericke that was very well covered too, where there are little or thousands of little craters in the vicinity. Now the next slide shows an Earth-based photograph of the region swept by Ranger 8. So it began about here and then swept over to the right, and one of the craters covered well is this crater Delambre here, and these two, this twin pair here of Ritter and Sabin craters, and the impact occurred here where you have that little circle. So the sweep was in this direction, and now in this direction also you will even see on this Earth-based photograph, you will see a couple of grooves here along the shoreline. Rills is the astronomical term for them, and they are really in the nature of graben, as the geologists call them, that is strips of land that have sunk between two fault planes, simply sunk, dropped, say 50 feet, 100 feet, or whatever the case may be. Now, this region then is covered. Now the next slide shows the first of the Ranger 8 photographs, and this is of the crater Delambre. This is still in the highlands, you note, and has very much more magnification, effective magnification, than any Earth-based photographs ever had in the past. So this already is a major gain, although the main gain is in the Sea of Tranquility. Now the sweep was in this direction, so the next frame, the next slide is here, is in the corner of the Sea of Tranquility. So here you have that pair of craters to which I drew attention a little while ago, Sabine Ritter pair, and then you have a couple of conical craters here as well in the same field. Here you see some mountains of the shoreline of the Sea of Tranquility. The shoreline curves around from here to here, and this crater Delambre which you saw on the previous slide is in this area here. Now, I call your attention to these troughs here, these rills, which are these shallow depressed areas, and then a number of what look like scars, grooves, which were cut apparently by fragments thrown from the crater Theophilus. Now the next slide shows these graben, these rills, with more magnification. And this is a truly magnificent photograph, as you will have heard from previous announcement by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. The choice was deliberately made that this mission would, in this manner, give this broad coverage, and I think this has paid off. A tremendous number of, tremendous variety of results have been obtained. Note how you have this broad, it looks almost like a freeway here, and you have another one parallel to it, but you notice there is structure in it. It isn't just a simple depressed area. At this, there is a lot of structure in here which to a geologist has a great deal of significance and gives clues as to the structure of the mare floor. Note these scars. You see the one here, the one here, the one here, and others. These scars are from fragments that were thrown out of the crater Theophilus, which is some 250 miles away off the picture. Next. Now we are getting into the more interior portions of the Sea of Tranquility, and we will see some rather odd things. We see in the first place craters, large ones and small ones, as we would have expected to see. But in addition, you see some odd depressed regions, this fan-shaped region here, for instance. This, of course, as I have said, can only be a sample of what the pictures have, have covered. Next. Here you see some grooves, some of those Theophilus grooves as close-ups. This is going to be very important for further analysis. We hope to learn what happens from these appearances, and by combining different pictures stereoscopically, we hope to learn what forces have played a role here in shaping these things, these troughs, these scars, and in this way learn something about the structure of the mare floor, that is, of this lava floor, the hardness of it, just the various dynamical and mechanical properties. Of course, all of this is of scientific interest and is also of interest in the Apollo program. Next. Here you see the last of the A frames. Now, here the parallel with Ranger 7 is a very close one. Ranger 7, as you may remember, took about 200 A pictures, about 200 B pictures, that is with the A and the B cameras respectively, and those were the full-size pictures which had 1150 scan lines each. And then you had, in addition, the P frames which were taken by the four P cameras. Now, the last of the A pictures of the Ranger 7 exploration really is very, very similar to the last of the A pictures of the Ranger 8. Apparently the cord was kicked or something. We will have light again in a moment. So the one of the main results then of this mission can already be stated, that we attempted to find out whether, first the question, whether the structure of this mare, of the sea, was radically different from the structure of the other mare. And the answer is that basically no. We find a very close similarity between this region, which is more recent probably than the other region, that is, it was covered with lava more recently. It has a different color, it is bluer than the other region. The other mare was a rather yellow region. This is less yellow, it is more bluish. Yet, we find a great similarity, and if you did not know that this was taken with Ranger 8, you would think it is one of the Ranger 7 pictures. There's really a very close similarity. So, this then is an important conclusion. It is a provisional one, obviously, because we got those pictures at they were taken at 2 a.m. today, and the pictures have been in our hands only for a few hours. So you do not expect me to give a very final report here, but the impression which these pictures have created on the scientific team is that there is this very close similarity between the two maria, and for this reason we can say that probably all lunar maria are pretty much this way. This is the next one. where you see a lot of interesting detail. You see here a small crater with raised rims and a central bar there on its floor, central ridge there on its floor. Here is a large crater, and here we have found some rocks, actually. Some rocks are apparently quite rare on the moon, maybe because the lunar surface is rather fragile and they disappear if they are swung onto the lunar floor from a large distance. But here on this rim, we find a number of rocks, of rock-like masses. Again, further study is needed. We have an interesting feature here, a sort of what we among ourselves have been calling a dimple crater, a crater where we seem to have a drainage of lunar material into the deeper regions of the moon. There may be some hollow underneath. This is at the moment, of course, speculative. There may be other explanations possible, but it looks very much like drainage craters as one can find, for instance, in Hawaii. Next, I think I have just one more, and this is next to the last of the pictures taken in the mission, taken with the P camera. So what I have shown you in the past three slides now is the last frame of the A's, the last frame of the B's, and this is the next to the last of the P's. The last of the P's didn't come out too well. That was taken under adverse conditions. But this is the next to the last. And here you have a resolution that is you can see craters between about 1 and 2 yards in diameter can be recognized. Well, this is, as I have said, this is the last of the slides, if I may have lights now. All of this is just a sample, you will understand, of the very large collection of magnificent material that has become available. A lot of it the scientists haven't even seen. So just one or two remarks then at the end is the new results. The results of the new MARA look very much consistent with the results of the previous MARA. So I think we have, between the two missions, Ranger 7 and 8, a really very adequate coverage of the dark areas of the moon. Next, in addition, we have a very good provisional coverage of the land areas of the moon. So in conclusion, I think that the NASA and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory ought to be congratulated for the completion of a very remarkable mission, which I think has been 100% successful. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there is a sample of the photographs, as Dr. Kuiper has told you. As in the forthcoming days and weeks, of course, other photographs will be examined, and we will have a chance to look at these in a great deal more detail and learn a great deal of additional information about the moon. Now, at this time, I think that we will throw the conference open to questions and answers, and we will now invite questions from the press. Yes.
Dr. Kuiper, you made reference to these odd depressed regions. Had you ever seen these before? Were they a surprise? And what theories do you have about them?
Well, I think I made clear that we are not in a position, obviously, after looking at the pictures for a few hours, to give any more than just an impression. We can state a problem. We see a very interesting problem there. These depressed areas might conceivably be areas where, for some reason or another, there has been a collapse. Collapses do occur in lava fields, and that may be the most reasonable explanation. But I am certainly not ready, and I have, in fact, not even had the opportunity to discuss this with my colleagues on the experimental team, so I am in no position, really, to give anything like a final answer to this question. But offhand, I would say these may well be areas where collapse has occurred. And on the other hand, these scars, these linear features, to which I called your attention, those seem to be just mechanical in origin. At least a number of them seem to be that way, just caused by flying fragments digging into the surface of the moon.
Do you think, Doctor, that any of these areas would be safe for a manned landing?
Well, of course, this is a question that is on our minds all the time in this whole program. At the whole Ranger program, we have been very conscious of the fact that any clues we could find which would assist the Apollo program, that this would be most important. It is also clear that by simply overflying an area and taking pictures, you're not going to find out in any direct way how strong the surface is. So that anything you come up with in a way of an explanation must always be regarded as provisional, as an informed guess, if you wish, but no more than an informed guess. My own personal guess, whether it's informed or not, I wouldn't want to comment on, but my own guess is that the lunar material has a strength which is probably somewhat similar to the materials which one can produce in a vacuum. If you melt rock in a vacuum and let it then solidify, then it will sort of blow up into a froth-type material. And it has been, that has been studied in various places by Mr. Dobar and others recently. We have also made some studies ourselves in our lab in Tucson. And there is also material in Hawaii that somewhat resembles this type of material. It has a very low density, about between 1/10 and 2/10 of water. And it has a bearing strength of the order of a few tons per square foot. So it isn't so bad. Nevertheless, one should remember that if this is really a froth deposit, there may be cavities there, there may be treacherous things there. So it is not, one should not automatically assume that it is everywhere safe to go.
Roy Neal?
Yes, I'd like to ask Dr. Kuiper if these views and conclusions expressed so far by him are representative of the entire team of experimenters. And if not, if we might hear some differing points of view.
Well, I have expressed my own view, and I think that it would, I have also indicated that so far we have just collectively looked at the pictures, but we certainly haven't formed a considered opinion of the experimental team. I think it would be proper if what I have just said, which is purely my own, if the other members of the team are in disagreement with it, maybe this would be an opportunity for them to say so.
I think perhaps, without putting it quite that way, I think we would like to invite the other members of the team to make whatever comments they wish to make. Dr. Shoemaker, do you want to make some comments? There's a microphone right in front of you there.
Well, I think that Dr. Kuiper has given a very nice preliminary summary of some of the main features of the photographs. The question that interests many of us the most is the detailed structure and the characteristics of the rather thin layer of material, or the uppermost feet or yards of the lunar surface, and in particular in the Mare surface where the high-resolution pictures were obtained. This, of course, gets us into an area where it's necessary to develop some kind of theory or model in order to fully interpret the pictures. And I think each investigator is going to adopt a somewhat different starting point, reflecting his own background in science, perhaps, in attempting to analyze these photographs, or the highest resolution photographs. I think there is indeed a very large area of agreement among the individual members of the experimenter team. It's only when we come to the more interpretive or speculative phases of the analysis of the pictures that you are bound to get some differences of view, which of course are not going to be resolved until other kinds of data become available. I myself would tend to interpret the features that we see, the softness of the features, and the distribution of craters in terms of a rather simple model in which the upper surface has been formed by repeated cratering by very small fragments, mainly derived from bigger craters on the moon, but also by interplanetary objects, meteorites striking the moon's surface, and that there is nearly everywhere a layer of fragmental material that's been chewed up by repeated bombardment of flying fragments. And these fragments range in size from minute microscopic particles up to things that are very large, and they make the very large craters. I think this is a consistent model from what we have both from the Ranger 7 and Ranger 8 data. As Dr. Kuiper has remarked, the similarities between the details, the very fine details on Mare Tranquillitatis and Mare Cognitum is perhaps one of the most striking results. I think this is very encouraging from the point of view of Project Apollo, since we deliberately attempted to pick an area where there might be some difference expected between one Mare surface and another, and in fact got almost the same result in terms of the fine structure that we can see in both areas. We can start to think about extrapolating these results with some confidence to the other Mare surfaces on the Moon, surfaces which cover about 50% of the side of the Moon that we can see. I think that is as far as I'd want to go.
Dr. Urey, would you like to make some comments?
Well, I have felt in connection with the question of the strength of the surface of the Moon that it is not possible to estimate the strength of a surface from pictures unless one knows something about, in detail, the kind of material which one has present. We have estimates, we make estimates of strength of materials on the Earth because we know a great deal about the processes occurring on the Earth and the kind of materials that are here. But I think it is very difficult to draw conclusions about the strength of materials for, say, the Apollo project from pictures alone. Now, I think there is some evidence that there is a fragmental layer, as Shoemaker mentions, and part of it comes from the dimples. Some 3 months ago, at a meeting of the experimenters, I pointed out that the dimples might be due to the drainage of material to a hole below. And they have a curious shape. Namely, they come in with a slope to a point at the center, and there seems in some cases to be a little whitish button at the bottom, at least I think there is. And why is it that they have this curious curved character to the walls? At least I think that it has that. And I think it may be that the material from the central part is not scattered back to the rest of the Moon. And this would have the effect of making the cavity have just the pattern of the spattered material from a point at the center of this. I pointed this out to the experimenters, as I said, about 3 months ago. And in the meantime, I have devised another idea, namely that there is a difference in the scattering characteristics from this spot at the center. Namely, it throws material farther away from this spot than the neighboring material. And this might occur if the neighboring material is soft and a particle penetrates it and makes a little puff that scatters material close by, while there is a hard material, metal or something of that sort in the center that scatters material to a great distance. And of course, the depth of these dimples, well, one of them I estimate to be about 20 meters deep, 50, 60 feet deep. This might be an indication of the depth, the minimum depth of fine fragmented material on the surface of the Moon. I think it's rather the maximum estimate that anyone has made for a material of this kind. I think those are the only remarks that I have to make in regard to the question at the present time. Perhaps other things will come up later.
Thank you, Dr. Urey. Mr. Heacock, do you want to make any comments? Mr. Whitaker, you want to add any comments?
Not really, no. I think I'm in general agreement with the other experimenters that the surfaces of the Mare are probably scoriaceous, crunchy material mixed in with dust, and not too hard, but certainly strong enough to support a spaceship, I would imagine.
Well, let's come back then to some questions. Mr. Bergman.
I'd like to ask Dr. Urey, how long he thinks it'll take to resolve the debate over what the moon's surface is and what the bearing strength might be.
Well, in order to answer some of these questions, we must get some chemistry in it. Of course, you would expect me to say that, wouldn't you? And the surveyor missions will have a capacity of determining the rough chemical composition, which will tell us whether it is lava flows or meteoritic type material or something of this sort, because there's quite distinct differences between a basalt and between typical meteorite material. But I doubt if we are going to be able to answer some of these questions to the satisfaction of all people of different points of view until we land a man on the moon and can actually make direct observations physically of what the surface of the moon is like.
Do you think it is safe then, Dr. Urey, in the present configuration of the lunar bug, for men to land on the moon in the LEM or bug before we are sure of the bearing strength or chemical characteristics?
Well, I think that Surveyor has some instruments on it that will give us some information in regard to the strength of the moon. And this will be most welcome before Apollo goes. And I would only say that before Ranger 7, I had a confidence that the surface of the moon will be strong enough to make Apollo possible. I still have that confidence, but I do not believe that either Ranger 7 or Ranger 8 changed my opinion at all. There just wasn't evidence of this kind that seemed to me convincing. The point is, finely divided material in a high vacuum, solid material, sticks and does not flow freely at all. And under these conditions, I think it would have the strength of crunchy snow or something of the sort. But I think tests and Surveyor will be needed before the man that goes to the moon will have any confidence in this conclusion.
Thank you. Question?
Considering what we know, sir, about the Russian work in relation to the moon, does Ranger tell us anything more about how we stand in terms of our contest with them, if that's what it is?
Well, in the sense that as far as the Russian photography of the moon is concerned, they have reported one successful mission which photographed the backside of the moon from a distance of about 40,000 miles. These photographs, of course, were very much cruder than the photographs which you've seen here today. So that in that sense, Rangers 7 and 8 have taken photographs of a quality far beyond anything which the Russians have shown us. Question?
Would any of the experimenters be willing to give us any of their ideas about the possible depth of any dust covers or layers that might exist in these areas?
Any experimenter want to comment on that?
I think that Dr. Urey and I are fully in accord that, in fact, I stated this very thing, that without measurements on the surface itself, you're not going to get the bearing strengths, and you're not going to get, of course, any depth measurement of a layer of loose material either. These things cannot be simply guessed at from photographs. No matter how well the photographs show the surface. There are certain guesses one can make, and I ventured a guess about the bearing strength on the basis of certain analysis, and it was frankly just a guess. Similarly, the thickness of any dust layer, one can say this, that the moon shows different provinces of different color, that is the different parts of the lunar surface have different color. These color differences are not large, as you well know. You don't see them even just by looking with binoculars or so, but they are real. They can be measured, they have been recorded, and the edges of these color provinces are sharp. Therefore, we can say this, that the moon is not covered with a layer of cosmic dust. That is certain. There's absolutely no question about this.
Now, about the moon, how much of lunar material, loose lunar material that is on the surface, that is much more difficult to determine. My own guess would be here, on the basis of the impact rate of cosmic material that has been estimated in the past, and about 2 years ago, and that seems to be confirmed by the recent Mariner mission to Mars, where lots of such measurements of the cosmic material are being made in space. It is about 1 gram per square centimeter for the entire age of the moon. So that's not an awful lot. And my own guess would be that the layer of loose material is not more than about 3 to 6 feet.
Mr. Miles?
Can we learn if these pictures have shown anything that will lend more to either the Vulcan theory of crater formation or the impact theory?
I mean, do the pictures, let me repeat what I believe is the question, Emmy. Do we have better evidence for meteoric impacts or for volcanic activities on the moon as a result of the photographs? Oh, I don't know. Do you want to comment, Shimmy?
Well, what we see primarily in the photographs are the small craters. This is the new evidence from Ranger. And a large number of these that are found both in Ranger 7 and Ranger 8 photographs can be related to swarms of very small craters around the big craters. We can say that these are probably secondary impact craters, that is, they're formed by pieces thrown out of the big ones, and they land at low velocity on the moon. My own opinion is that when we go to very small craters, these secondary impact craters are the predominant features that we see. The number of other craters, the little sharp, steep-walled craters that are seen in the high-resolution Ranger photographs, are just about the number that would be expected for the infall of meteorites, such as we have observed on the Earth for the last 50 years, if this infall had occurred over a period of time of the order of 100 million years or so.
May I make a remark?
Dr. Urey.
I would just like to remark that a very great geologist, he was an American geologist, in 1893, by the name of G.K. Gilbert, published a very scholarly paper on the surface of the moon using the Naval Observatory for observing purposes. And he covered the question completely in regard to the question of collisional craters and volcanic craters. Most of them are volcanic, was his conclusion. Collisional was his conclusion. He gave very good arguments for it. And a few small, minor ones are associated with some sort of internal activity of the moon. And I believe that this conclusion should have been accepted in 1893 and should have been held too firmly in the years in between. And if we had, a lot of people wouldn't wasted time talking about the volcanic theory of craters on the moon.
Thank you, Dr. Urey. Question?
Yes, Dr. Pickering, I don't mean to belabor this matter, but I'm still a little bit uncertain as to just what was accomplished back on July 31st, and then again now. On the basis of the information we have had from Ranger 7 and Ranger 8, can we say that we have speeded the day when we know that men can land on the moon?
The answer to that is yes, we have. Because before July of last year, we had theories about the surface of the moon, about the detailed structure of the surface. We still do not have all the answers, but we have many more answers. These answers are confirming some theories, are changing other theories. And until we actually have a vehicle on the surface of the moon, of course, as was said here a few moments ago, we won't have all the answers. But Ranger has given us a great deal of information to add to our store of knowledge, which will indeed speed the day, as you say, when we will positively know what will be required for a man to step out on the surface of the moon. The specific areas of information which have been added, of course, are just the detailed nature of the surface. In other words, as seen from an Earth-based telescope, you cannot photograph objects on the moon smaller than perhaps a quarter of a mile or half a mile across. The question as to what sorts of smaller objects would you find on the moon, is one then which could not be answered by telescopes from the Earth. You could speculate on this from your theories, but you could not have direct evidence. What Ranger has given us then is a direct evidence of what these areas of the moon look like on the scale of a few feet. In other words, we are taking photographs which will show objects a few feet across on the surface of the moon. And this is indeed new and important.
Bill?
I'm sorry.
I'd like to add a point there and give a very specific answer to your question. Before July 31st, we actually didn't know whether there was any spot on the moon that was level enough and smooth enough for the Apollo spacecraft, the LAM, to land. On July 31st, we found out there was at least one that was level and smooth enough for the LAM. And by comparing that last small frame with the surrounding area, we got the impression that this probably was typical of Mare Cognitum, and in fact, that in most regions within that Mare, it would be possible to land a LAM insofar as the surface roughness was concerned. Today, we know that there are at least two. And we also have reason to believe that the view we have today at the high resolution is probably typical of this particular Mare. So we're certainly developing a feeling that the moon is in general smooth enough for the LAM to land on. The big question now is it hard enough? And in as much as it is smooth enough, let's find the very best places within those smooth regions.
In this connection, Mr. Cartwright, I've been asked to relay a question from Mr. Hines of Washington. Are the Ranger 8 pictures satisfactory enough so that the Highlands will be the next target? This is Bill Hines' question to you.
There is no answer to that question today. The targets for Ranger 8 have been tentatively determined. They do depend on the launch day. It varies actually for every day of the total launch window, and they will be reviewed during the coming weeks prior to Ranger 9 launch.
You meant 9, didn't you?
Yes.
Ranger 9.
Ranger 9 launch, I'm
yes.
Sorry if
Did I say Ranger? Okay. Bill Stout.
Dr. Pickering, we keep talking about this shower of material from outside coming in on the moon, however intense it is, and the loose material on the surface. Does any of this indicate that the environment would be hostile to a man's arriving there, walking around, and getting out safely?
Well, one question, if I may make so bold as to answer that question in front of the experts here, I think a question which has been raised, of course, is the matter of whether or no meteoric debris will be flying around on the surface of the moon in sufficient amounts to be a hazard. And of course, there will be more flying around on the surface of the moon than on the Earth because, of course, of the lack of air to stop these particles from, as it does on the Earth. However, meteoric impacts, I believe, are not sufficiently frequent for this to be a very serious hazard. Perhaps, on the other hand, Shoemaker, do you want to comment on that?
On the basis of the data that can be obtained from the Earth, in particular, the observations of meteors and the data collected from satellites with impact detectors, it appears that the hazard from flying fragments is very much less than many of the other hazards in the Apollo landing.
Okay. Dr.
If I could make a remark on what we have learned as a result of these flights, I would say that it is a very good idea in investigating a new place to take a look at it in detail to see what its form, what the surface is like. At the same time, you cannot expect to answer all questions in this way, but it's a good way to begin. But there is a feature that has interested me very much, namely that rather large objects have been thrown from Tycho to Mare Cognitum 1,000 kilometers away, 600 miles, say, at a velocity of about 3,000 feet per second. And this means really surprisingly large objects have been tossed over the moon. Figures based upon work that has been done by Dr. Shoemaker indicates that their masses were of the order of 10 million tons. You agree, Gene? Yes, something like 10 million tons. And this, to me, was surprising. I wasn't expecting it. Maybe Gene was. And I really think that it may be that this means that meteoritic material in substantial chunks has left the moon and has arrived at the Earth. If we could establish this, it would change a number of things considerably. I do not believe the evidence is conclusive in regard to this question, but you expect uncertainty and disagreement at the edge of knowledge.
Thank you, Dr. Urey. Yes?
Dr. Pickering, since we're very concerned with the hardness of the surface and all of the physical characteristics of the spacecraft and its impact velocity are known, would it be worthwhile to attempt to photograph the wreckage and see what effect it produced on the lunar surface?
This question has been raised before. In fact, of course, we even speculated on whether or no Ranger 8 should use Ranger 7 as a target. But if you consider this realistically, even though the accuracy with which we can land on the moon is indeed high, to photograph an object as small as Ranger on the surface of the moon would mean that we would have to come in very precisely on the target. We would also, of course, have to be able to photograph a before and after picture of the area so as to really know where the new crater was and how large it was. And if we take, for example, the accuracy of the present shot, which is estimated as being the order of 10 to 15 miles, this means that photographs which would assuredly encompass the impact point would of necessity then have to be perhaps 20 or 30 miles on the side, and as such it would be impossible to see an object as small as a Ranger crater. Therefore, although this is an interesting speculation, it is just not a practical engineering assignment at this time. I think we have time for about one more question. Yes.
Is there any relationship between crater size and the size of the impacting projectile?
Somebody want to answer that down here? Gene? Yes.
While there is some statistical scatter in the experimental data, there's a very close relationship between the energy of a projectile and the crater formed if we deal with target materials of the same characteristics. It depends, of course, then on both the mass and the velocity, and these two factors can be interchanged to some extent.
Thank you very much. I think that we will have to conclude with that question. Thank you for coming.